Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed, I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I loved my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I came of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo of letting go of God. Letting go of God.
Hello and welcome to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. We are on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is Wednesday, June 13th at 7 p.m. So if that's not the date and time you're listening to it, then you must be listening to a rebroadcast or a podcast. Anyway, I hope you'll stick around. This is an Atheist Call-In Talk Radio Show. If you'd like to call in and talk to us about our topics that we'll be talking about tonight, you can always call 865-333-5937. That's 333-5937. Phone lines are open, and we're hoping to hear from you. I'm Doubter 5, and as usual, we have on Wombat on the line tonight. Can you say hi, Wombat? Let me get a sound check.
What's up, everybody? It's the Wombat!
Hey, Wombat. Yay,
two
welcome.
Weeks, new life, new potential. Let's go.
Okay. Got you loud and clear. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a call-in talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. Conversely, we talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, well, you're just not. There are several atheist and free-thinking and rationalist groups that exist right here in Knoxville, and we'll be telling you how you can connect with them right after the mid-show break. Also, in addition to this radio show, did you know that there was an Atheist Call-In television show broadcasting right here in Knoxville and has been for over 8 years now? Did you know that, Wombat?
Yes, I did, and I cannot wait. They brought back all the characters, and it's going to be amazing. Pikachu's there, Snake's there. They brought back Ice Climbers. We finally have a full cast who's going to be the best Smash ever. Best brothers ever, all in
the year. I think that maybe one of these days you'll find the show and you'll be right on, but you're not tonight. It's on Community Access TV, which is Comcast Channel 12 on Comcast Cable, and it's actually going on right now. It starts at 6:30, goes to 7:30. Switch over if you want to commute it and listen to us, of course, that's what you should do. See if the voices match. I doubt they will. But anyway, it's going on Comcast Channel 12 right now, and it always happens Wednesday, 6:30 to 7:30. And that's a collaboration of ASK, which is the Atheist Society of Knoxville, and RET, which is the Rationalists of East Tennessee. Together, they've got about, 36 years of atheist activism here in Knoxville, Tennessee. And in spite of what Steve Martin would have you think, there are lots of atheist songs out there, and you'll be hearing some of them right here on this program and generally on the station as they are in rotation. And now we're through the intro and the announcements. So what's our topic tonight there, Wombat?
Okay, I kind of had an awesome... First, I just want to say I really enjoyed... I don't know if this is the first week I had back, but I went down to Knoxville to talk with the Rationalists of East Tennessee.
Yeah.
And I want to just say I had a wonderful time presenting street epistemology as an idea to them. There was just such a welcoming crowd of a big turnout, and I really appreciate all the questions I got back from. I got a weird, scary thing that happened to me. Or not kind of a scary thing, but sort of like a disappointing thing. Like, I went down to Knoxville to give my talk, but then afterward I would go to see Mama Wombat, my mom, and hang out with her for a couple of days. But before I left, I had a package that I was expecting, and the package that I was expecting was a pair of glasses.
Uh-huh.
And I told UPS, you know, hey, if you please don't leave packages in my front door. You know, like, it's an okay neighborhood, but I just don't want to have, like, a package just left in my front door for a couple of days.
Well, sure.
Because who knows what will happen to it, right?
Uh-huh.
So I ordered it ahead of time so that it would come early. And then when UPS said it dropped it off, it said it dropped it off my front door. I'm at work. I'm like, okay, that's fine. I'll just pick it up when I come back from work. At least it'll only be on my front porch for, like, about 6 hours. It won't be that bad. I come home. The package isn't there, and I'm freaking out. So it sucks because I called my mom. I'm like, Mom, I feel like my package got, like, stolen. Like, I think someone just took it off my front porch. But I'm hoping that the landlord took it, or, like, it's at the landlord. Like, maybe the UPS man dropped it off to my landlord instead. And she told me, well, I'll pray for you. Like, you know, it's like a concerned parent would.
Yeah.
But, you know, she believes in God, and she says, you know, I'll pray for you. That's the best we can do. I'll pray for you, and I'll keep you in my prayers, and it'll work out. And, you know, even though she knows I'm not a believer in God, I at least appreciate the sentiment that, you know, she's thinking about the package.
Yeah.
Anyway, I go see you guys at RTEP. I go have a good time with her at Chattanooga. Then I come back, and I call my landlord, and it turns out my package is actually at the landlord the entire time. Like, my landlord just picked it up,
wow,
made sure it was in safekeeping.
Yeah. Well,
and
good.
So I'm really happy. Exactly what I wanted to. And in fact, I even have a note at my door that says, please don't leave packages at my front door. Please leave them at my landlord's office. So, like, it's all been covered on my basis. Anyway, I call my mom back, and I told her, hey, my package got picked up by my landlord. Everything was good. She's like, you see, I told you. That's God's grace. I prayed for you. That's how it turned out.
Yeah.
So I told her at that point, I was like, Mom, please don't say that. Like, you know, I put the effort in, you know, to, like, make this work, but I appreciate the sentiment either way. But you do get, what I want to talk about today was the concept of people saying, you know, I pray for you, or, because I pray for you, this good thing that's happened to you is a result of me praying. You know,
sure.
Things like that.
Uh-huh.
The effective value of prayer is what I would say. And I think we've all had situations where someone has told us that they pray for us, particularly
right.
for non-believers.
Uh-huh.
Maybe not out of a form of spite, but definitely out of a form of, how do I put it? Like, this is the best way that I can say to help you. And then if something good happens, I can claim, hey, it's me.
Right.
And if something doesn't happen, I can just say, I can keep praying for you.
Mm-hmm.
Has that something happened to you?
Oh, yeah. And I've had it all kinds of ways. I've had it out of spite, and I've had it out of general good feeling, genuine good feeling, I guess I should say. You know, where people are concerned about, you know, a particular thing going on in my life, and they'll say, well, I'll pray for you and hope that you get better and all that stuff. And that's fine. If they have general goodwill toward me, genuine goodwill toward me, I don't have a problem with it. I understand where they're coming from. And even if they understand where I'm coming from, they're still trying to give me their blessings in the only way they pretty much know how. What gets me is the other kind, you know, when they do it out of spite, when they throw it at you and then leave, knowing that you're an atheist and they're not showing goodwill at all. They throw it at you. It's like a parting shot. It's like, screw you, and then they're gone.
Uh-huh.
The message that they're sending is, you know, I'm going to ask the creator of the universe, my close personal friend, to fix you because you are broken. You know, and I'm better than you. And it comes across as arrogant, conceited, and self-righteous in that particular instance.
Could you give a scenario where someone's actually said, I've actually never gotten the angry, I will pray for you phrase.
Well,
even when I came out of there,
I mean,
my mom,
if you'd be talking,
she never told me that.
I have talked to people at work, not at my most recent job, but the job before that, and they'll bring up something about Christianity that they hope to convince me that Christianity is true. And of course, I know the anti-apologetic for it, and I know, you know, how to pop that bubble, you know, because it's just not true, and I can tell you why it's not true. So I tell them that, and they'll just look at me silently for a second, and they'll either say, you gotta have faith, or they'll say, well, I'll pray for you. In other words, they'll pray that my broken mind gets fixed by the Almighty Creator of the universe, and I'll be good again.
Well, you know, I actually hear that as well, I don't have a defense for your counter defense.
Yeah.
So basically, I can't say anything else. What's the best word that I can say to close the conversation?
Uh-huh.
Well, I'll pray for you. It's a dismissal as much as it is hey, I don't have anything else of, you know, substance to offer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to back away as best as I can.
Right.
And this is the only way that I know how to do it. Even if it's not done in, like, how do I put it? A mature way, like some people can definitely use it in a spiteful way.
Uh-huh.
It's an acknowledgement on their part that they don't have anything else other to add to a conversation that's intellectually based, other than, well, I believe it. There, that's all I can say. Mm-hmm. Bye.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But like I say, they're basically telling you're flawed. You're not. If you don't believe the way that they believe, then you're wrong and you're broken and you've got to be fixed. Bring you back in line. Basically, and that's the part that really gets me.
So we've been talking about prayer for a while. How about we take this back to, like, the very basics and, like, maybe describe what we mean by prayer, and not by prayer, but, like, how maybe a Christian understands it, but maybe, like, how we understand it after we've come out of religion. Like, there are people who pray to God who have communion with their, like, their higher power or their being, higher power of interest. Where they feel like they are directly communicating with the person at the seat or the force or their energy, whatever it is.
Uh-huh.
And as I transitioned from theism to atheism, and I was a theist a lot longer than I was an atheist, I see the appeal of having someone that you can pray to in a time of need.
Well,
you feel like you're in a position where you can't control the outcome.
Right, and especially somebody who controls everything, that's your good friend and has your best interest at heart, you know, to be able to talk to them telepathically, excuse me.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm sure it can be a lot, a real comfort to you in times of need. However,
not only that, but it keeps your blood pressure down. Maybe, like, there could be some strict beneficial results for someone who feels like, man, I'm in a position where I can't control anything. I need to outlet this somehow.
Yep.
Let me just talk to this person who's always been listening to me, and that calms me down and makes my stress lowers my cortisol.
Meditation would do the same thing, though.
Sure, exactly. Yeah. But then the question becomes: if these are all just chemical benefits for that person through just, like, you know, self-realization and self-thinking and self-thought and, like, just calming themselves down, does it really justify the existence of, like, the higher power? Like, does just because you can talk to something, does that prove that thing that
it can't, because there are other religions and they all feel like they're talking to their God, you know, and they get the same benefit from it. You know, they calm the person down, they give them a minute to think, and they might actually have a solution to their problem occur to them when their mind is quelled. It certainly doesn't give you any reason to think that there's a specific deity out there supplying those answers, especially when, you know, there's so many different religions in the world that are claiming the same thing and they're not talking about your God.
Not only that, but there are religions that have a much more ardent prayer system or cycle than I would say most Christians do. Like, you look at Muslims, they have much more regimented means of prayer where they do it at very specific times of the day, multiple times a day. They don't skip, or at least the ones that are, like, more traditional certainly don't. I even think modern Muslims tend to pray at very specific intervals throughout the day.
Right.
And it seems to be, like, when I remember when I was a Christian, or I remember when I knew other Christians much more, like, intimately than I did now, where, like, sometimes you wouldn't even pray for, like, a couple of days until you absolutely needed something. Or, like, you're about to, like, oh, that's right, prayer.
Right.
Let me knock this out of the way.
I've never really understood that anyway, because theoretically God knows everything. He knows exactly what you would want before you even say it. And theoretically, he's already got a plan in place for you. Why would you ask him to change that plan? And why would he change the plan aren't you trusting in God to carry out his plan? Period.
Well, how do you know his plan doesn't involve you praying for things to change the plan?
Well, does he just want to hear you beg? Is that it? I mean, you know, why would he want you?
Yeah. That's a much more better answer. Like, why does God need you to pray to him if he already knows what you want when you'll want it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's the purpose of prayer for the objective of the
And another thing, In the Bible, it specifically says to go to your closets and pray. Don't pray in public. And that's what they're doing when they tell you, I'm going to pray for you. They're bringing their religion out in public and saying that they're going to pray just in order to put you in your place, which is, you know, against the dictates of the Bible that they purportedly worship.
Right. And you might see more in theocracies things like public prayer, because it generates a social perspective of you are either with us or you're against us.
Right.
And I remember I had a friend who worked with me in one of our labs, and I won't say his name to protect him, but he was from a country that was very much very strict in a particular religion. And he came to America, and I asked, like, you know, because I was friends with people who had a similar religion as him. He was a Muslim. What was like being Muslim, or if we could go out and get lunch together with some of our friends, and it would be cool, we'll go to a halal place. And he said, no, I actually don't care about halal or eating any kind of food, because I'm an atheist.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I was like, what? You're from that country and you're an atheist? Like, yeah, but we can't. Like, I was only able to say I'm an atheist since I came to America. Right. Like, it's actually pretty awesome. Like, whoa, I had no idea.
Yeah.
So once he told me that, I had so many questions for him, because even then I was still getting used to the atheist term. Maybe we could talk about this in a later episode. But what was sad was, he eventually got another job, but it was back in that country again. And he had a family, so he had to, like, go to that country to, like, support his family. So, like, I guess, so he, like, packed up and he went back there. But, like, in my mind, I remember him telling me stories about, like, how they would have a certain kind of prayer where they have to, like, dip their head down on, like, a particular
prayer road.
Cobblestone road.
Oh, yeah.
And there was, like, this little particular headrest that you can have to, like, keep your head from, like, touching, like, the pavement. Like, to, like, protect your, like, forehead a little bit.
Yeah.
But and the device, that little pad, had a little indentation on it, such that by the time you were done praying, that indentation would show up on your forehead.
Oh, really?
And so, like, everyone, when they were all done praying, would have this little particular indent in his forehead. And what he would have to do sometimes is, if he, you know, for whatever reason, didn't pray that day or whatever,
he missed it.
He would push that thing up against his head, just, like, press it up against his head so hard, so that, like, after a minute, he would remove it. Just so he would have the invitations too, just so people wouldn't judge him for not being a Muslim,
right,
or not being religious like everybody else.
Uh-huh. Not falling in line.
It's just an interesting thing.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. It's just an interesting thing how prayer can be used to keep people at a certain, at a certain level in a society,
uh-huh,
and make sure that you can control people. Like, uh-huh, prayer can be used for really bad reasons.
Right.
Docility. Prayer can be used for really good reasons too.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, if it can be used for good or bad, what do you mean by it? What's your intentions? And is it any value whatsoever? I think that's what we'll be talking about. I know I'm pretty long introduction, but I think it's a pretty good one.
Yep. I'm just trying to make a few notes here. Go ahead.
Sure. So I would think one of the cool things is the value of prayer. I think there was a really cool scientific study that was done on in Wisconsin, and again, in a bunch of other places, but I don't remember those places. I just know this is not an N of one that I'm talking about. But the Wisconsin study took a church, several churches in the Wisconsin area, and said, this is what we're going to do, church. Basically, we're going to have a group of your population come to us and say, we will tell you guys, we will pray for, like, any of the ailments that you guys have, write them down, and we'll have the other church, like a different group of churches, pray for another congregation's well-being. And we'll see if the prayer helps that particular set improve over the ailments they listed. And if not, we'll track those too. But then for another group, but the thing was, for one group, they said they'll pray. For another group, they said they won't pray, but they won't know which one is which group. So basically, these two, because they want to have, like, a control. And then for the other group, they just said, we won't pray for you guys at all. You'll just have your ailments, and this other group of churches won't pray for you.
Right.
So you have three groups. One will be prayed for, one that doesn't know if they'll be prayed for or not,
yeah,
and one where they know they won't be prayed for.
Right.
And it turns out,
this is, for the audience, this is intercessory prayer, not just grateful prayer or praise prayer. This is prayer where you ask God to do something for you or on your behalf. It's right. Asking God to interfere or influence some aspect of the real world. And this right. was, I think this particular study was done in 2006, so it's about 12 years old
now. Oh, you know about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So it actually turns out that the group that said, that group that knew that they were going to be prayed for by other theists who genuinely believed in the God, actually had a detriment to their ailments. They did not improve at all. In fact, they actually got worse because they were stressed out essentially by the fact that they had to get better because other people were praying for them.
Right. Among they had other more reasons. Complications, I believe it was.
Yeah, absolutely. And the scientists decided that, like, they just seemed to be more ill at ease over the fact that they had to improve by the fact that other people were praying
right.
for them. Whereas
uh-huh.
the group that didn't know if they were being prayed for or not, it was 50-50 in terms of, like, whether or not they're actually improving or not. Like,
uh-huh.
there was no discernible improvement.
Yeah,
it seemed to be, like, some people got worse, some people got better, and it was on the odds about 50-50.
Yeah.
And the group of people who weren't getting prayed for at all, they typically did far better than the ones that were being prayed for.
Huh.
So if anything, it seemed like prayer had
an adverse effect. Yeah, effect on
yeah, an adverse effect
uh-huh.
overall.
Yeah, because
it was
of
an
the
interesting
stress
study,
that
yeah.
they felt they were under. Yeah, that's
yeah.
true. But you got to wonder, everybody, most people in religion will guarantee you or tell you that prayer works and, you know, swear by it. But when you try to actually put it to the test, it doesn't. And then they'll tell you you're not supposed to put it to the test. Well, why not? You know, is God so
right.
weak or so powerless that he can't stand a test? Just, you know, it makes no sense. And the thing about it, there was a video on YouTube you can go, the listener can go to and look it up. It's talking about the effectiveness of prayer. And it says, you can either pray to God, you know, and this particular thing is pray to God, see how many times it comes true. And, or go pray to a milk jug and see how many times it comes true. One of the guys took it a step farther and said, I'm going to pray to, what's his name, Pesci, the actor, because he seems to be a real effective
uh-huh.
guy. Joe Pesci?
Joe Pesci?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He says he gets things done, and then he's going to write down all the hits and misses that he has for Joe Pesci. But, you know, the results are pretty much equivalent. You know, prayer has no use. There's another dimension of prayer that most people don't realize. That is that prayer is basically witchcraft. You're praying, you're asking a supernatural being to do your bidding in this world, and you're using ritualized words and motions to do it, which is the definition of witchcraft. But you're, you know, people say, well, it's white magic, you know, we're not doing any of that dark magic, but it's still magic, it's still witchcraft. You know, you're calling upon a supernatural being to do your bidding, and, you know, most people don't think of that.
So, like, if you actually look at the definition of witchcraft, it says, like, the practice of, or the use of spells or invocation,
uh-huh.
the invocation of spirits,
uh-huh.
basically, is what it says. And if you think of, like, the Holy Spirit,
mm-hmm.
And into, like, in, like, the mortal realm or the realm that we share to
yeah.
have, like, some sort of influence, it has very close ties with witchcraft. And
uh-huh.
I can imagine a lot of people who are theists consider that more of a derogatory term.
Uh-huh.
But the thing is, I think that the point that you're trying to make is, it's not much different from what they would themselves condemn
right.
as witchcraft,
mm-hmm.
what they were doing themselves.
Yeah.
So to point at something and say, hey, that's witchcraft and that's bad,
yeah.
but what I'm doing is good, is
mm-hmm.
some sort of like hypocrisy,
right.
considering that they're basically the same thing
yeah.
in the essence of they're both invocating spirit.
In the Catholic Church, it goes even further. You're talking about the Holy Spirit. Well, in Catholic Church, you have all these priests that have been canonized, and now they're, what's the word for them?
Saints,
right. So you've got this whole host of supernatural beings out there, spirits, if you will, that you're calling upon for specific duties, for specific things. So, you know,
right.
That also fits the definition.
It's really nuts when you consider it, though. like how I think what the thing is when you are exposed to something over and over and over again, you're desensitized to how weird or unnatural it might be.
Consider the Eucharist. It's ritualized cannibalism, but you've done it since your earliest memory, since you were like 3, so you don't think about it in that terms, but that's what it is. Eat of my body, drink of my blood. Right.
Oh, yeah. I never thought about that, actually.
Yeah.
Well,
what? And they literally, according to the teachings of Catholicism, they literally believe that the crackers and the juice transform inside the person to the body of Jesus Christ and the blood of Jesus Christ. So, you know, it passes that step from ritualized to actual cannibalism.
Right. It's also a good excuse to drink while at church. But, like I said, the things that we tend to do on a repetitive basis, especially since we're young, tend to be really obscure. For example, like, you know, when we get in a car and we drive on the highway, we're driving against traffic that's on the other side of us, but it tends to not be separated by like any sort of physical barrier, but rather like a strip of yellow tape.
Uh-huh.
So like you'll have car A driving at 80 miles an hour, another car driving the opposite direction at 80 miles an hour, a foot apart from each other, maybe a couple of feet at best. But like that yellow paint is the only thing that's expected to like, you know, separate us. There might be aliens from space who come down and be like, whoa, what are you doing? This makes no sense. What, how safe is this? Like, well, we lose like maybe about 1,000 lives every, you know, 100 feet of highway, but we deal with it. It's like, no, you got to stop this. This is crazy. Let's put up some interdimensional transporting portals of some sort. Have you guys figured that out yet? It's like, no, we haven't. We have this thing called religion that's kind of stymied our science for a while.
Yeah, but 1,000 years or more.
A little bit.
Yeah.
But still, if you look at prayer, when you're a kid and you're praying and you're like hoping like something good happens to you, you still get those good feelings. You still get all those good chemicals in your head. But when you start to connect that with the existence of like a supernatural being that you're talking to, that's when the levels start to like move on. Like you can meditate, you can talk to yourself, but when you start invocating like the spirits of like Catholicism or like the deities of like, you know, Islam or Christianity or any of the like the major popular religions that are out there, or spirits from like, you know, ancestors who are coming to talk to you, or spirits that exist in trees, you cross a barrier where it's basically witchcraft, but you're used to it to the point where it doesn't feel that way to you.
And if the listener doesn't believe that it's witchcraft, just go to a healing revival one time and watch what goes on. And people laying out of hands, saying special words, people falling over, being possessed by demons and then freed of them. If that isn't witchcraft, you have to tell me what is, because it certainly looks like it to me. It meets all the criteria. Anything to say before we take a short break? Bottom of the hour.
Sure, one thing. I would just say, like, it's not so much that what you're doing is witchcraft. It's that when you call someone else to their practice is witchcraft, how is that any different than yours, aside from you praying to the God that you like and them praying to the God that you like?
Right. And this is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. We're on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM, live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. And we're going to take just a short break here, listen to a song, and then come back and we'll continue our topic. Remember, our phone-in number is 865-333-5937. That's 333-5937, and we're talking about prayer today. And it's going to get away a little bit from witchcraft and talk about The Poetry of Reality, an anthem for science by the Symphony of Science. And we'll be back in a few.
Science is the best tool ever devised for understanding how the world works. Science is a very human form of knowledge. We are always at the brink of the node. Science is a collaborative enterprise spanning the generations. We remember those who prepared the way, seeing through them also.
If you're scientifically literate, the world looks very different to you. And that understanding empowers you.
There's real poetry in the real world. Science is the poetry of reality.
We can do science, and with it, we can improve our lives.
There's real poetry in the real world. Science is the poetry of reality.
The story of humans is a story of ideas that shine light into dark corners.
Scientists love mysteries. They love not knowing.
I don't feel frightened by not knowing things. I think it's much more interesting.
There's a larger universal reality of which we are all a part.
The further we probe into the universe, the more remarkable are the discoveries we make.
The quest for the truth in and of itself is a story that's filled with insights.
There's real poetry in the real world. Science is the poetry of reality.
We can do science, and with it, we can improve our lives.
There's real poetry in the real world. Science is the poetry of reality.
The story of humans is a story of ideas that shine light into dark corners.
From our lonely point in the cosmos, we have, through the power of thought, been able to peer back to a brief moment after the beginning of the universe.
I think that science changes the way your mind works, to think a little more deeply about things.
Science replaces private prejudice with publicly verifiable evidence. There's real poetry in the real world. Science is the poetry of reality.
We can do science, and with it, we can improve our lives.
You're listening to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show.
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.
And we're back. I'm Dr. Five. We have Wombat on the phone. We're live on WOZO Radio, 103.9 LPFM, here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is Wednesday, June 13th, 2018. And if you're not listening to us at that time, you're listening to a rebroadcast or a podcast. By the way, this particular show makes 100 shows that we put up on our website, digitalfreethought.com. If you like these shows and you'd like to listen to more of the historical shows or the archive shows, go to digitalfreethought.com, click on the blog button on the upper left-hand corner, then click on podcasts, and you'll find 99 shows, and then tomorrow you'll probably find 100 of them. Also, if you like this radio station and would like to support WOZO Radio, go to WOZO Radio, that's WOZORadio.com, and click on the chip in or support button. And let's see what else. Oh, we were going to talk about the free thought groups that you can join right here in Knoxville. First of all, there's the Atheist Society of Knoxville, founded in 2002 by yours truly. We're in our 16th year. ASK now has over 800 members, and you can find us online at KnoxvilleAtheist.org. Or you can go directly to meetup.com and search for Knoxville Atheists. It's just that simple. Heck, you can go on Google and look it up that way, Knoxville Atheists. And if you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to Meetup and do a search for an atheist group in your town. If you don't find one, start one.
Start one.
Also, you can join ASK in person at our weekly meetup, which happens every Tuesday evening at the Black Horse Pub on Kingston Pike in Bearden. We get together for food, drink, and conversation. Everybody is welcome as long as you don't come to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Thank you, Atheist Experience out of Austin, Texas, for that one. Another large free-thinking group here in Knoxville are the Rationalists of East Tennessee. They've been around for about 20 years. RET has biweekly presentations and discussions on the Pellissippi State Campus near Hardin Valley Road. They meet the first and third Sunday in the Goins Administration Building Cafeteria Annex. If you don't have to remember all of that, just go to rationalist.org and click on Upcoming Events. There's also the Secular Student Alliance, although they may be a little inactive right now since it's summer. They are active in high schools and colleges for camaraderie and community to any free-thinking student who would like to be involved with the free thought movement or would just like to find other free thinkers to hang with. Everybody needs like-minded friends, and atheists are no different. Earlier in the show, we said we'd talk about the Knoxville Atheist Call-In TV show. Well, it's called Free Thought Forum, and you can see it every Tuesday between 6:30 and 7:30 on Comcast Channel 12 or Charter Channel 192. Or you can watch it streaming online at ctvknox.org. You can also find some of the archives of their shows on YouTube, where a fan has been posting them. Just go to YouTube and search for three words, Free Thought Forum Knoxville. Also, if you're interested in getting involved with the TV or the radio show, just come to an ASK meetup or RET meeting and talk to us about it. You could be our next co-host or guest. Okay, where did we leave off there, Wombat?
We're talking about the value of prayer. I started the conversation with a true story of me feeling like I got a package stolen at my front door.
Uh-huh.
And I called my mom. She said, hey, I'll pray
yeah.
for you.
Yeah.
And then I eventually found the package, and then her response to that was, well, you see, I told you you'd find your package because I prayed for you. Isn't God great? Or very mm-hmm. similar to that.
Yeah.
So I think we kind of got a little sidetracked. How about we go into kind of some of the responses that we should give? Because I don't think my response was very good. I think I told my mom, hey, Mom, you know, yeah. I don't believe that.
Well, first of all, how's it make you feel to know that God values you and your glasses more than, like, feeding children in sub-Saharan Africa or curing cancer or any of that? I mean, he put you right on top of the list.
Are you asking Mama Wombat that? Are you asking Mama Wombat that?
Yeah.
Hey, that's my mom.
yeah. No.
No, it's a good point. Yeah. Good point. It's a good point.
Yeah.
In a world where we have really terrible things like people starving to death,
mm-hmm.
yay, my glasses got saved
right.
by
mm-hmm.
God.
Yeah.
You know, though I would say your counter, listen, like I from my talk that I gave you,
uh-huh.
you got to be prepared because that targets the person's conclusion, and what I try to do is instead of target the method.
Yeah.
And I
yeah.
think there's some good ways that you can target the method in that, and we'll get to that after some of your
yeah.
responses. But
I want
if
all
you
the
say
shortcuts.
That, yeah, if you say that, they're going to say, well, it's a mysterious reason for why they're suffering, blah, blah, blah,
right.
blah, blah.
Yeah.
Anyway, what do you got next?
If you or I were to act that mysterious, we'd just be called a jerk. Okay. okay.
I'll pray for you.
yeah, I'm broken. All right. Now, one of the things is when someone knows that you're an atheist and they say, I'll pray for you, it's kind of like a slap in the face. It's like saying, you know, I'm okay, but you're not. I'm good with God and you're broken, and I need to ask God to make you right, to fix you so that you can now fit in with us and be just like the rest of us. And that's really, what's the word?
Petty.
Petty. It is very petty and mean, which means small-minded. And, it just makes us kind of grumpy when someone does that, if not mad. So there have been a lot of people out there, atheists, you know, who have come up with cute little sayings to repost to that, I'll pray for you or God bless you. You know, when people say that to us, when they know that we don't believe in God, and it's thrown at us like a gauntlet or slapped in our face like a gauntlet. So I'll go over some of these things. One of them says, generally, you know, just to keep the peace, a lot of people would just say thanks and feel like a doofus and walk away. But they, in other words, they do not want to make a stand, even though the other person knows they're an atheist and they know that they're breaching the trust between them to throw God out at them like that. So when other people come up with things like, when someone says, I'll pray for you, they will come back and say, I'd really rather you didn't. Or please don't, which is not real bad. They do get worse. They get funnier too sometimes. One of them says, he says, when, you know, there are people who come back, like we're posting this on Facebook and say, what do you say when someone says, I'll pray for you? And they know you're an atheist and they're doing it just to get your goat. One of them says, I'll just tell them I don't need your prayers. Another one says, sure, if it makes you feel better, go for it. But a lot of them were just saying, I'm okay. No thanks. I'm fine. Thanks anyway. Which kind of just drops the thing, which is pretty cool. I mean, they don't take it back to them in a confrontational way, which is good, I guess. Even though the believer had started the confrontation by saying it in the first place. Another way is good wishes are always welcome. Thank you. And, you know, converting their prayer thought to wishes, wishes thought. Yeah. And another one would say,
appreciate it. Thank you. That's a really nice way of handling it, I think.
Right. And another person said, thanks. It's a comfort knowing that you'll be thinking of me. Mm. And, you know, which is pretty much the same thing.
Same thing. I think it's nice not to dip down to the same level of pettiness as someone who's throwing it at you. Because, again, we don't live in a vacuum. Other people see what we do. And if people see two petty people being petty at each other, they're going to side with the person they already agreed with to begin with.
Yeah.
But if they see a petty Christian talking to an open-minded, very polite atheist, even if it doesn't, even if it's not enough to sway them, other people are going to see it, they're going to see it, and they're going to realize, man, maybe we need a better way of handling ourselves.
Right.
And if they change for the better, then the dialogue gets better, and that's better for everybody.
Yeah. Well, should I go into any of these that are, like, not nice?
Go on ahead and knock them out. Go on ahead. Have your fun.
Okay. Here's one. It says, when the guy says, I'll pray for you, you know, you can say, well, thank you. I'll sacrifice a chicken for you. And another one says, fine, I'll think for you, is another one that I got quite a bit from other atheists.
Go for it.
Yeah, you pray for me, I'll think for you, because you obviously aren't thinking. It also focuses the conversation on the other person, underlining what separates you two instead of what unites you, which is really the thing that bugs me about religion. It's an artificial barrier that is thrown between people who could otherwise be good friends. There's no need for it. There's never been any good evidence to show that a God of any kind exists. But yet we have 10,000 religions where people identify with and identify everybody else as the outsider or the other, and it causes all kinds of conflicts in the world. I mean, even look at Northern Ireland, when everybody there is pretty much Christian, they still had the Protestants and Catholics at each other's throat, killing each other and maiming each other for decades. Why does it make atheists angry? Well, it seems arrogant, conceited, and self-righteous. You'll ask your intimate friend, God Almighty, the creator of the universe, to fix me so that I'll become one of you.
Not so much that, but I also think it's just plain rude. Right. Like if someone says, hey, I don't eat meat, and someone says, well, here's a plate of bacon, that's rude. Why would you do that?
Right.
They just said they don't eat meat.
Right.
If someone says, hey, like, I'm allergic to flowers, and someone just throws a bouquet in their face, it's like, what are you doing? Why go out of your way to just do that and spite them? They just told you they don't like flowers. If someone says they don't believe in a God, and you say you pray for them, what are you going about that? That's just as rude of doing those other examples.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Show some class.
Exactly.
And if you've ever used that in a spiteful manner, it's okay. But it's, as long as you recognize that, hey, that's a really screwed up thing to do, stop doing that, you know?
Right.
Like, it's not a cool thing. It's not making you look any better. It's not making your guy look any better.
Right.
So, if anything, just try to conduct with some decency. That's all that we can really look for.
Also,
and we'll
show
you guys
like,
the same way as well.
Yeah. Also, it seems like an attempt to manipulate you. I'll pray for you.
What do you mean by that?
It seems like a cheap trick to psychologically intimidate the atheist into either feeling inferior to you or into feeling that he or she is in a position of to be shamed or pitied or to otherwise emotionally manipulate the atheist into coming closer to your religious position. So it's a manipulative saying as well.
Okay.
Okay. Now, there's I saw an article when I was looking around for this type of thing. And if you shouldn't say, I'll pray for you, and remember, the atheist doesn't believe in God. He doesn't think that your prayers are going to do any good. And from these studies that have been done nationally and internationally, they really don't have any effect. So you might be asking yourself, well, what can I do? What are things that I can do instead of saying, I'll pray for you? What can you actually do? Well, there's a guy named Bree who is working at Faith. He works on the Faithfully Committed website. Now, this is a religious website. And he says that instead of saying, I'll pray for you, why don't you commit to actually helping your friend? There's
right.
several things
he says,
here.
Like, provide. Listen, I wish I could think. I wish I could pray and, like, you know, resolve this issue, but let me instead of saying that, say, well, this is what I'd like to do to help you out if I can.
Right.
Or, like, this is here's my plan, if you're willing to listen to it, or, like, you really mean a lot to me, let me help you out.
Right. You can provide ride to the doctor's appointment for your friend if they're ill. Take them to the doctor's appointment, wait for them, comfort them. Don't turn away from their discomfort. You can help them with grocery shopping, provide food and necessities to someone who isn't able to make it to the grocery store. You can go help clean their house if they're in a position where they no longer can do that or can't do it very well. Maybe they're having failing eyesight or whatever. What would be super helpful instead would be for people to come over, wash dishes, and do laundry so that they can take a nap with their little ones. Cooking, make regular meals for someone who is ill, who had just had a baby, who is otherwise unable to cook for themselves. If they can make meals, they may still need a babysitter. If you know that they're having a hard time with life and you know that they need to get out of the house either for another job or whatever, and their health is failing and they've got to get the doctor's appointment, well, they may need a babysitter. Take a little bit of time for yourself just to help them out a little bit. Regular phone calls or video. Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm thinking, like, when I called my mom to say, hey, listen, I'm really stressed out that my package got stolen, I wasn't really so much asking for, like, her to resolve it by, like, talking to her superpower friend. I was more just wanting to vent my frustration with someone, and it was just worth it to have someone who cared about me, that I knew cared about me, listen to me for just a moment about something that was really frustrating. And I didn't want, like, you know, sympathy. I didn't want her to, like, necessarily fix it. I just wanted her to at least allow me to express it in, like, a constructive way someone.
Right.
And just the fact that she was willing to listen to me was, like, the most powerful help.
Yeah.
It was a real reason why I called in the first place. Mm-hmm. And when someone calls you and you feel the urge to say, I want to pray for you, maybe they're just there because they need someone to talk to.
Right.
And maybe that's not the best time to sell your theology, but just a person that they want to be able to talk to again in the future.
Right.
That's all I was trying to say.
Yeah. The next one kind of addresses that. It says, perform some regular phone calls or video chats with that person. If you're far away and you can't be there to physically help, commit to spending some time weekly to pour into your hurt feelings, hurt friends' feelings, or emotional support. You can go for walks together if you live close by. Simply spend some time together, which is what you were talking about. Sometimes just being there and being willing to listen is more than enough. Share about yourself. Let your friend know that she's not alone, or he. And the last one, and possibly the most important one on this list, ask your friend what they need. How can I help? And be ready and willing to follow through.
That's a great question.
Right.
Instead of saying, I pray for you, ask, well, what do you need? Or what can I do to help?
Right.
That's such a better thing to say.
Yeah.
Substantially better. It also gets into the method of it as well. Like, I mean, as far as a response for me, like, I could have some witty responses, but I do feel like thank you very much. It's really nice to know that I have you're giving me your best wishes, or like you're wishing me for the best. I appreciate that. That's a classy way of dealing it.
Mm-hmm.
But for the person who's got to say the I'll pray for you, instead say, what do you need? How can I help? These are better things to ask rather than closing the door with your statement of, I will pray for you.
Yeah.
That tends to end conversations.
Mm-hmm.
Say things that keep the conversation going, because most of the time they just want someone to listen to them.
Right.
And that's always a good therapy. It's always a good response.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it reminds me of the cartoon I had about a couple of squirrels. One of them had their nest blown down out of a tree, and they were looking at it. It was all broken on the floor, on the ground. And another squirrel comes running over and gasps and says, "Oh, I'm so sorry about your nest. Here, let me do something about it." And she kneels down and prays. And then she says, "Oh, there, I feel so much better." And she scampers off. And the squirrel is still sitting there looking at the broken nest. And now you see that all over Facebook when, you know, you got a religious friend or something. They've got something going on, and they come up there and they tell you what's going on, and they say, "Please send prayers." And then there's a whole list, like 100 people come on there and say, "Prayers." And that's it. I mean, that's as far as they're willing to go to help this person.
It's insane.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that we had, like, I think this conversation helped us in the sense of now we know that, like, these things don't, if you're an atheist listening to this, you know, it doesn't just frustrate you. If you're, like, still in the closet with her as guard to your, you know, theism, atheism decision, like, when someone says that to you and you got a question in your mind, it's not just you. And not only that, but we now know that, like, we have some pretty good responses. I like the classy approach. Like, you know, if you do feel like you're being spiteful, the more spiteful you feel like someone's being to you, the more classier I think you should be, in a sense of it's not worth it to try to satisfy them by also showing that you're angry and you can be spiteful too. That mm-hmm. People love being trolls, and yeah. Getting responses out of people like that
yeah.
is like justification for them to continue being a troll.
Right.
But to keep it classy, say, "Hey, thanks for having your thoughts," or "I appreciate you thinking about me," or
right.
"Hey,
it's
nice to know that you'll have my best wishes."
Yeah.
Those are good responses to give. And then for the people who are willing to give out the "I pray for you," I think we have a really constructive way to still get the good sentiment across if they have it, but also have a productive element to it as well that also keeps the conversation open. Because I think one of the highlights that I made during my talk was when you're listening to someone, you don't want to say things that shut the conversation down if your goal is to, like, allow the person to, like, express themselves and try to, like, figure something out. And when you say, "I'll pray for you," that's like a sentence. You're, like, ending it. You're like, "Hey,
yeah.
This is done.
Yeah, it's
I'll
like
pray
a period
for you. It's done."
At the end of the sentence.
Basically, yeah. I'm talking to the big man. It's all going to be handled. Don't worry about it. Stop talking. But if you say, "If there's a way that I can help you, let me know. What can I do? I'm here for you." Like, these are, like,
yeah.
great responses to give if someone comes to you in a time of need.
Yeah.
And it can actually be a really good way to yeah. maybe course correct or let people know in the future, "Hey, listen, remember that time when, you know, you said you'd pray for me? I think maybe a better way, since, like, you know, based on my belief, or if you don't want to talk about that, just say, hey, I think a better way or something I really needed to hear at that time was, what can I do for you? What can I do to help?" And I think that maybe that would just be better off in the future if I ever do come to you
yeah.
again. Just letting
yeah.
you know, and I
yeah.
do appreciate you coming with
mm-hmm.
me.
And like you said at the very beginning of this show, though, that there are two types of way to say this. If you don't know that the person's an atheist, or you just have, you're lacking of any secular way of conveying your feelings, but you really wish them well, that's one way of saying, you know, "I'll pray for you." However, there's the other type where people are just throwing it at you like a glove, you know, in your face, you know, a challenge, you know, when they really want to get the top hand or the last word in, and they're doing it not out of a spirit of wanting to help you at all. And so you have to be aware of what kind of message they're trying to send to you with that statement. If they have your best interests in mind, and they want the best for you, and they're just really wishing you well, then take it for that. You know, say thank you. I appreciate your wishes. However, if they continually throw it at you like a challenge, and every time you get together with them, it's the same old thing, well, then you might want to look for friends other places, because that person does not have your best interests in mind.
Right. I agree. That was a great conversation.
Yeah. And we didn't get any callers, and the phone line is still open if anybody wants to call in and join the conversation for about three more minutes. 865-333-5937. Phone line's open.
Not only that, but this conversation, like about nearly 100 others, are all being cataloged on digitalfreethoughtforum.com. Is that accurate?
Yeah, we've done more than 100 shows, but we've recorded and posted 100 shows now, or we will after tonight. So go to digitalfreethought.com if you enjoyed this show and you'd like to check out some of the archives. Digitalfreethought.com, click on the blog button, and then look for podcasts and click on it, and that'll take you to it.
And I got some friends who would love to call into the show and be with guests, as usual.
Cool.
Now that we got a phone line set up, I think we can go back to having some like that.
Well, that'd be great.
I got friends from around the world on this. Like I said, like the street epistemology thing is connecting me with people that I never thought I'd be, you know, friends with. I just got contact with a guy from Australia today who wants to set up and have these conversations with theists in his area and have like productive conversations with people about like what they believe and hopefully try to like give them a means to like hopefully have more reasonable methods to get to their conclusions. Uh-huh. And if they have them, great. But if they don't, hey, maybe they will learn a better way and be more comfortable with I don't know as an answer. In Australia, I've had conversations with people like that from South America or South Africa. And in Finland, this is cool. And like I said, I think anyone that has the ability to talk to someone, because most people want to be listened to, and just effectively knowing how to listen to people is like the key. And like I said, as we said in this talk, when people call you and they just want someone to listen to them, throwing out your theology on top of it might be a closed door response.
Right.
Like, I'll pray for you to end the conversation. Mm-hmm. Be willing to help them. Be willing to do something of value. Because I think as we've discussed in this talk, prayer doesn't have as much value, and it could actually be used as a weapon of spite. So do something valuable. Help your friend. Don't pray for them. You take the responsibility, and you help your friend. Mm-hmm. And sometimes all they need is just someone to listen to.
Yeah. Be willing to help. That's the problem. You know, so many people just throw that, you know, I'll pray for you, because they don't really want to help. They just want to have something to say and then say bye and leave. So gauge your interest and your abilities and your willingness to help the person and help them in the real world, not in some supernatural fantasy. Where else?
I like that.
Yep.
I like it.
Okay, well, I guess we can go ahead and close the show out. We've got about 2 minutes left. This has been the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM Live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. And we have Wombat on the phone calling in from the great state of Kentucky. And
always
happy to have you on here with me co-hosting. And
not a problem.
Any final words?
Yeah, I finally found my glasses weren't stolen. Like I said, my landlord did have them, and I'm totally happy to have them. They look okay. They're okay.
Oh, yeah.
They're good.
Oh, good.
I like my glasses.
Good.
They're okay.
Very good. I didn't tell you that I went downtown yesterday. I guess it was yesterday. Yeah. For a couple of hours and set out a little table and put up a sign. And
what?
Yes, I did. I did. For those of you who are downtown a lot, I'm the gray-haired guy that puts up the Atheist Society of Knoxville sign on a little table and just invites people to come over and talk.
We'll talk about this offline. This is amazing.
Yeah, I did have one taker. He didn't talk very long, and he was from out of town, so it wouldn't have made very good radio, but I want to let you know. Anyway.
That's great.
Yeah. So,
fantastic.
Remember, everybody is going to somebody else's hell. Don't worry about it until they prove that souls and hells and heavens are real, and they have not done that in 2,000 years. So don't sweat it. Say bye-bye, Wombat, and we'll see them next week.
Bye-bye, Wombat.
We'll see you next week. This is Doubter 5, and bye.
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply